We are going through the Sermon on the Mount over the Lenten season. It's a great way where Jesus teaches us how to live the Christian life that's set apart from a worldly life. There's supposed to be a difference. And last week we talked about the Beatitudes. We talked about how we in the world refer to blessings as the stuff we have, but oftentimes when Jesus is talking about blessings in Scripture, he's talking about the ways we are transformed to be more like Jesus. And today we're going to move on to the salt and light verses. It's familiar text. I've preached on it plenty before. But the moral of the story with the salt and light verses is that we are called to live a faith that matters and a faith that counts. And we can go to church all our lives and we can do all kinds of good things and not have a faith that has any sort of impact on us or on others. The salt and light motif offered by Jesus reminds me of a story from my past, my youth pastor days. Back in the 90s and the 2000s, youth pastors could get away with quite a bit that we can't do these days. Have kids eat weird stuff as a youth group game. We could get away with things you just can't do today. And one of the things I did, I hosted a fiesta one time and told the kids we were going to have a special game, mystery game, they needed to come and experience for themselves. So, you know, we're eating our tacos and drinking our horchata and wearing sombreros. And finally, I unveiled it. For the end of the night, we're going to have a chili pepper eating contest to see who is the toughest kid in the youth group. And so I start off, and I have like 40 kids who sign up. I mean, I've got like 100 kids there, but 40 kids were like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. So they all line up at a table, and I start by giving them all a sweet bell pepper. Now, spiciness with peppers is rated on a scale called the Scoville scale that rates the spiciness of the capsaicin in the peppers that makes them spicier the larger the number is, and a bell pepper is a zero. Okay, so bell peppers are zeros. Start with a bell pepper, and the kids are like, oh my gosh, we got this. So they eat the bell peppers, no problem. Next, I had them eat a poblano Anaheim pepper. And an Anaheim pepper takes you from a zero to a 750. Now, the scale goes to like 5 million. I don't know why. But 5 million is like straight capsaicin, where if you ate it, it would literally kill you. But that wasn't the point of this game. In this game, we had an Anaheim pepper hit the scale at 750. A couple kids bowed out. You could start feeling some of the heat. Now, who here likes to eat hot stuff? Anybody? Like, love it? Like, really, really, really spicy? Okay, because I can't. I'm like, you know, mango salsa starts to, like, top out for me. I'm really not, I don't do the spicy thing that well. Maybe like occasionally buffalo chicken and I'm like dying the whole time. But anyway, so these Anaheim peppers, a couple kids bow out. I get a poblano pepper and that starts to pare the group down from 40 to about 10 kids because a poblano is a 1500 on the Scoville scale. It's about twice as spicy as Anaheim. And so we got 10 kids left, and then I pull out the jalapenos. And this is where it starts getting into some serious business. Again, if you don't like spicy stuff, like me, you're not ever going to eat a jalapeno. I tried one time. I'll never forget that day because it's ingrained in my mind. I just don't do jalapenos. And they hit a 2,500 on the scale, and you could see kids, they're starting to, like, sweat. And they're starting like to eyes water and kids are like, you know, I eat the jalapeno, but there's no way I'm going hotter than that. I'm out. By the time I got to the serrano pepper, which is a 15,000 on the scale, I had 5 kids left. They were all boys. They were all like 6'2 or bigger. They were all like 250 pounds or bigger. They were football players. And they came to the youth group that night to the pepper eating contest with something to prove. And you know how boys can get when they're being competitive? Oh, anybody can get when they're being competitive, but you got the big football boys trying to be tough and wipe the tears from their eyes as they're eating the peppers. And then I got to the habaneros, which is a funny little thing. Anybody like eating those? Gosh, you guys are crazy. Jerry, I can't believe you. I would have never thunk it. Habaneros are like, they're like this big, but they hurt. And once I got to the habanero, there you could just pop them in and swallow them. I knew better than that. I told the kids you have to get it and we have to watch your teeth cut it in the middle. And then these kids are like dying once they eat a habanero. It's 100,000 on the scale, so we're significantly hotter. And after that, there's three kids left for the mystery finale pepper. Now, these I had to go to a special like time market to find. It was a ghost pepper. They hit a million on the scale. Anybody ever eaten a ghost pepper here? You guys? No, see, not... No, Paul? That's good, Paul. I have one right here. No, I'm kidding. I never knew anybody who ate a ghost pepper. I just knew from the internet that it's the first time that they say on the internet, like, this pepper could kill you if you eat too much of it. But again, this was the 2000s and we could do such things, and nobody was tweeting about it, so it was okay. So I didn't know what would happen to these kids, but I put milk out. Okay, for everyone the whole time, but they weren't allowed to drink the milk because the milk was like bowing out of the game. And apparently ghost peppers are really hot. Is that right, Paul? They're painful from what I understand, painfully hot. And this is the first time in my life I've got these three huge football players. Now, at the time, I checked their ages to make sure they were 18. It put me above liability. And I've got these kids literally on their knees, bawling their eyes out, trying to eat these things, and they can't do it. They're real tears, and then they chug the milk, and they're like, it's not working, it's not working, and they're smacking at their tongues, and they ran. I don't even know where they went, but they ran. And I want you to remember where I started the story. A ghost pepper, if you're going for spicy, ghost pepper is about the highest you can get. Carolina Screamer or something is the next one up, but apparently nobody eats those. Ghost pepper, if you take out all the spiciness, it's a bell pepper. If you are going for spice, you blew it if you ate a bell pepper, okay? Because bell peppers are zero. Sweet bell peppers are delicious. I can just eat those things like straight off the stem. It's like eating an apple or an orange for me. There's no spice. So you take the spiciness out of it and it becomes something it was never intended to be. Maybe even worse, maybe it's like a vegetable rind that you wouldn't put in food to make it taste good or spicy or anything like that. I mean, you have a whole lot of nothing if you take the spiciness away from a ghost pepper. And that's what we're talking about here. What happens if you make salt unsalty? What happens if you hide a light? It becomes utterly useless. That's what Jesus' message is. So let's continue on in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, starting at verse 13. It's a short one, so listen up here. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Amen. Like I said at the beginning, today's sermon and this part of the Sermon on the Mount is talking about the intentionality of our faith. Living a faith that matters, a faith that has impact. And you know from coming to church, hearing sermons, singing praise songs or hymns, that to live the Christian life is to stay on a particular path. It's a narrow path that Jesus carved out that requires us to live a righteous and holy life. And it's really tough. It's not the easy path. Now, on the contrary, we also know what it's like to live a life apart from Jesus, to violate his law, to take our faith in a direction that steers us away from him. And I'll be honest, I think that takes a lot of work too, to avoid Jesus. Ultimately, our spiritual growth is a product in a lot of ways of what we're willing to put in, what desire we have to be more Christ-like and to be transformed and to live out a faith that matters. Now, this salt metaphor can be thought of a lot of ways. Again, I've preached it as let's talk about salt. That's the flavoring you put on to make it salty. I put salt on my burgers and stuffed steaks and stuff like that. Argentines, all they use to season a steak is salt and a little bit more salt and then a lot more salt. That's why they're so good, apparently. But we put salt on our food if we want it to taste how? Salty, right. If we want it to be sweet, we don't put salt on. We put sugar. If we want it to be bitter, you understand. I talk about the fact that if salt loses its saltiness, it's just dirt. It's just beach sand. Literally. I mean, it's disgusting. Who would put beach sand on a steak to make it taste better? Here. And Jerry, you're willing to eat just about anything from what I understand, Mr. Habanero Pepper. We wouldn't do that, would we? I mean, we'd all sit here and go, that's disgusting. I've never heard of such a repulsive concept. That's what happens if we're like unsalty salt, if we live a life of faith that has zero impact on us or others. When Christians focus on worldly aspects of their lives and move away from Jesus, we're simply building up a big empire of dirt. It's 100% worthless. No one would choose to flavor their food with dirt if it's salt that they want. Now, in first service, something really interesting happened. Just about this time in my sermon, as I was talking about worthless things, I looked over at the communion table that's right over here, and there's a candle on it. And I forgot to light the candle. And I said to my, I actually grabbed the matches and walked over there and lit it. I said, you know, it's like a candle on a table that's supposed to be lit that nobody grabs a match to light. It just sits there. It was a hunk of wax until it was lit. Worthless. Good for nothing. Certainly not good for its intended purpose. I came across a television show recently, and I talk about this to talk about the amount of work we have to put into separating ourselves from Jesus. We get into sin patterns. We know what we ought to do and not do. It's just that we sometimes choose what we shouldn't do because it's pleasurable and it's good and it's easy and it's nice. But just as we have to put effort into our Christian lives, we have to put effort to drive ourselves away from Jesus. And oftentimes it consumes us. Our sin can consume us. Again, this television show is built upon the premise of lies being the way you live your life. And after an hour of watching this, I was kind of sick to my stomach because the lies just multiply and get stacked on top of each other, and they have to become full-on stories. And then they have to start getting other people involved in those stories, and they have to lie too. And these lies take on a life of their own. People have to corroborate the lies of others, get their stories straight. And after an episode or two, you realize that their whole life work is protecting secrets with lies. All of their time and effort is put into it. And all that unfolded from just one lie. We can think about what we've seen in our own lives, how much we have to put effort into sinning and breaking apart from Jesus I would suggest that it would be better if we put effort into our own faith journeys and try to grow closer to him and have transformative moments. So with that said, I came across another Greek metaphor for salt. This is actually cool. I'd never read it before. I think it's really helpful in understanding the text. And there's an implication here that Jesus may have actually been using this metaphor with his people because it's a metaphor that was prominent back in the day. Salt, in metaphor in that area, is used to speak of wit or intelligence, basically our brains. So if we look at the text from that perspective, it reads this way, and I want you to hear it this way. You are the understanding ones of the earth. Let me take a pause real quick. Jesus is talking to believers, to people who follow him, who live their lives wholeheartedly for him. You are the understanding ones of the earth. But if you intentionally choose to enact foolishness, how will you achieve the understanding that you seek? Your understanding will become worthless, and you will lack strength in all things. Our faith journey is about having understanding, about choosing a path and sticking to it. Doesn't mean we're going to understand everything. I don't understand everything. Nobody here understands everything about the faith. We ought to have understanding that Jesus has called us to a particular life, and that we get to choose whether we want to live that life or not. And we get to choose based on that choice what kind of impact we're going to have with that life. The apostles of Jesus, after he died and they did their ministry, they stuck to their paths. And as a result, they were all executed, violently in most cases. Okay? I won't go into details here because it gets into too much graphic stuff. But in their minds, they knew that following Jesus, the guy that got nailed to the cross, was going to lead to their own execution. And they had a choice. We can either disconnect from Jesus and forget about it because he's not here anymore, or we can follow the path that he had laid out for us, keep doing the ministry. Now, this is shaking people up. We just watched the guy die. What do you mean he came back to life? Give me a break. You think the leaders that killed Jesus are going to be happy that they're spreading that? And so they receive their punishment in due time. None of them thought to themselves, you know, I think that being crucified upside down is going to be okay. They could have, and if they were protecting and thinking about themselves, should have diverted from their paths, but they knew Jesus' message and the salvation he offered, and that's what they were thinking about. So they received his instruction and they lived it out. Even when things got hard, they kept at it. Even when they stumbled, they got back onto the path. And ultimately, it cost them everything. See, the Christian life, especially this teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, it's not about establishing what kind of gray areas that we can step into and still be okay. It's a bunch of choices, intentionality, that drives us to closeness with Christ, or doesn't if we choose that path. It's either to follow Jesus or intentionally choose to enact foolishness. So the real issue here when we talk about salt and being the salt of the earth is to ask you if you're an understanding one. I mean, you should be. You're here. We sing together and pray together, and you hear sermons and read Bible, and you pray together, and you pray in your personal lives, and you reflect and ponder on these things every week. And I would think that those of us who are here would believe we have some form of understanding about our faith and what this life is all about. It's a solid part of our lives. It drives us in a way that's different from how the world is driven. It means you've made a choice to live a Christian life, or you're trying to make a choice to live a Christian life. And being here and doing the things you do here and outside of here is an expression of that faith. So with that in mind, I want to ask how you're enacting your own faith choices. Are you following Jesus with all your mind, all your soul, all your heart, and all your strength? Or are you allowing yourself to become a foolish one? Which path is it for you? Because it's not both paths at the same time. It's one or the other. Jesus' message is clear. Living your life unto him is to become a person of understanding that allows you to keep being something good and valuable and full of worth, and then you get to flavor the world with that understanding. What a gift, and what an opportunity we have. Now, if we take this opportunity and squander it, then the whole thing becomes valueless, pointless, like salt that isn't salty, like a pepper with no spice at all. Understanding that doesn't lead to deeper faith. It's like a candle that sits on a table unlit. It's like a lamp being hidden under darkness. It's like living a faith that doesn't lead others to Jesus. It's like being a Christian with zero kingdom impact. So as the understanding ones, we have a choice to make, and that is to live it out. So we're called to have a faith that matters, a faith that counts, not a wishy-washy, lukewarm, flavorless faith, but a faith that impacts us deep enough that we are willing to be transformed, that we are willing to become more and more like Jesus, and that allows us to salt the broken world we live in a way that only Jesus' followers can. It's either that or we keep building up our empires of dirt. The choice is yours. Amen.